Hey, everybody, and welcome to the NFL Roadshow recap of the weirdest week in the NFL that I can remember, with a couple of great guests coming up to discuss those games. Bob Papa, the radio voice of the Giants and SiriusXM NFL radio host, and Jason Wilde, who's covered the Packers for 25-plus years, knows that team very well. What a week it's been for Green Bay, and we will get to that. First, though, so many bizarre games yesterday. 8 of the 14 teams that went into the day on Sunday in a playoff spot, that means top 7 seed in their conference, 8 of them lost. 8 of 14. And 2 of the other teams that didn't lose just didn't play. The Steelers going tonight, Bucks on a bye. So just 4 of the 12 teams that went yesterday that were in that type of a position actually won their ballgame. And frankly, the Titans win wasn't exactly confidence building in terms of their ability to absorb the Derrick Henry loss without issue. They got a huge win against the Rams, but they had some major issues on offense. Ravens worked hard for their win against the Vikings in a game that was somewhat reminiscent of Josh Allen's game the week before. Lamar Jackson taking a really long time to get things going, but once he was going, man, he looked great, and so did Hollywood Brown. But they needed overtime to get that win. Chargers also played it close with the Eagles. Frankly, neither of those results fall into the shocking category for me, even the fact that the games were close. I think that was something that we could have foreseen. But a 9-6 Jaguars win over the Bills in a field goal fest, no touchdowns, 3 turnovers from Josh Allen, who wasn't even the best Josh Allen on the field. I mean, come on, the Jaguars? Is there anyone left in a survivor pool this season? The Bengals last week, then the Bills this week, and the Cowboys too. How about the Cowboys? Ran out of their building by the Broncos, quite literally. Broncos ran the ball well, and the fans left early. I follow DeMarcus Ware on Instagram, one of the nicest humans, and he was at the game, having played for both teams. Little conflicted, I bet. Anyway, he posted he was aghast at the fans leaving. Said he didn't know that they did that. I'm not going to lie. There are a lot of things that disgruntled fans do that I cannot get behind. Booing, I hate booing. But leaving early, and maybe this is the Angelino in me, I kind of get it. Right? Time is precious. We're all overprogrammed. Sleep is valuable, though this was a day game, so that wasn't really a factor there. If the game's not working for you anymore, you do what you got to do. And this one, understandably, was not working for Cowboys fans, who should still be in on their squad, and I'm sure are. But it was an off day for sure. 30-0 in the fourth quarter. Ended up scoring a couple touchdowns in garbage time. But 3 quarters in, Dak Prescott had 6 pass completions for 79 yards. After 3 quarters of play, 6 pass completions. Just wasn't the day. Zeke going in and out with a knee contusion. Anyway, props to Denver, though, for putting that game together on the heels of that Von Miller trade with a ton of injuries. Looked like they were throwing up the white flag. Did not play like it on Sunday. A couple more weird games in the afternoon window. Cardinals-Niners. Can't believe the Cardinals won that one so handily, despite being without Kyler Murray and D-Hop and losing Chase Edmonds early in the game. That's QB1, wide receiver 1, and RB1 all out, and they still roll. That is a really bad look for San Francisco. And then Packers-Chiefs. Close, but only in the sense that it was unimpressive on both sides. I did not necessarily think that the Packers would win that game, but I did think that they would look better than they did, even without Rodgers and with Jordan Love. In fact, I kind of thought that Jordan would play well. The way the season has gone with surprising quarterback play, all those backups winning last week, clearly the Packers like Jordan Love, or else we wouldn't be where we are with the Rodgers situation big picture in terms of his future. So what happened to that offense? And what does it mean for the future? I think the way that it played out creates an interesting situation moving forward, one that I'm eager to discuss with my first guest. 3-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, now with the Wisconsin State Journal and The Athletic and the Wilde and Tausch radio show. It's Jason Wilde. Let's break the huddle.
Hello, let's go!
Two on two. Ready? Three.
Jason, I know you did your radio show earlier today. What is the temperature there in Wisconsin after that loss yesterday?
It's beautiful. It's 63 degrees. It's unseasonably in November. Look, I don't think Packers fans went into that game expecting a whole lot, right? I think that the expectation level for Jordan Love was not especially high. And so I think the frustration is that if you look at it as, well, if they were playing the 2019 or the 2020 Chiefs, then your expectations would have been even lower. But based on the way Patrick Mahomes is playing, the way that defense is playing, that game was there for the taking. And as much as Jordan Love struggled, which he did, let's be honest, he's a young quarterback. That's what young quarterbacks do. Two field goal problems and a muffed punt, and the special teams cost you basically 9 points, which is the difference in winning the game and losing the game. So, you know, they had more opportunity to win than I thought they would, frankly. Jordan Love played about the way I expected him to. I don't think we make any lasting decisions on him, but it's certainly disappointing to have your 7-game winning streak come to an end that way without your stud quarterback under center.
Let me ask you this. So I think I was in the minority of people that thought that there was a chance. I think my expectation was that Jordan Love was going to come out and play fairly well. And not just because, you know, we've seen backups do that this year in a way where we're constantly surprised by guys coming out and actually looking like professionals. But I think that there was a part of me that expected, because of the environment there in Green Bay and the fact that they are where they are with Aaron Rodgers, that they must have seen something from Jordan Love on the practice field in the buildup to that, that made them feel comfortable that they might have their quarterback of the future so that they could get to the point where they are in their relationship with Aaron Rodgers. Otherwise, I expected that they would have done anything that they could have done to make Aaron Rodgers happy. And clearly they're at a little bit of an impasse, or at least that's my understanding sitting where I sit in Los Angeles. Why was it that your expectations were not as high as mine, that he would be ready to step in there and produce?
Because I've watched him a lot. I mean, he's a really good kid. He really strikes me as an earnest kid who wants to be good. And I'm not willing to say, unlike others, that this is proof that he's not going to be. But remember, he came from a non-Power 5 school. He had some struggles with accuracy and turnovers during his college career. He had his rookie year wiped out by COVID. Like, I don't know how much further along his growth path he is, if they have an off season, if he has more work during training camp last year, and if he has more work during the season. But he was the number three quarterback last year. He didn't even get to wear his jersey on game day. He was inactive for all 18 games, including playoffs. And so that was his starting point then coming into this year. So Nathaniel Hackett, the offensive coordinator, was talking about the game with his wife leading up to Sunday. And he said to his wife, well, you got to remember, he's still a rookie. And Nathaniel's wife said, no, he's not a rookie anymore. And it's hard not to look at him that way. And so that's, I think, why I tempered my expectations. And I just think he's been really inconsistent. During the offseason program, he had a day where he was really, really bad, like really bad. And then 2 days later, he was awesome. Like, he was magnificent on the practice field. And I thought the preseason and training camp, he was kind of the same way. There were no really high days, no low days. So I just expected him. I think where my expectations were not met, and Matt LaFleur was honest about this after the game, was that he didn't do more to help Jordan Love. He's a really smart guy. He's a really, really good coach. I think the world of Matt LaFleur. I think he has saved Aaron Rodgers' career, frankly, by putting him in the offense. And because if Aaron Rodgers had continued down the path with Mike McCarthy, you know, I don't think we'd be seeing the revitalization that we saw, because he still has the talent, but your talent can only take you so far. So I was really surprised that Matt had to come out after the game and say, this one's squarely on me. It's not all on him, but it was partially on him. It really was.
What could he have done differently to set Jordan up for more success?
So he got away from the run, which every coach does, right? Like, I've been covering the league now for 26 years. I started when I was 12. That's why I'm so youthful. But he you know, Mike McCarthy used to say that. Mike Holmgren used to say that. Like, every coach I've covered has said that.
Establish it for 5 minutes.
Right. And I'm sure Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy would say it in Kansas City, too. And so that's one. Two, I was surprised at the types of passing plays that he was calling, right? Because there were some seven-step drops in there. I thought, get the ball out of the kid's hand quickly, right? And then finally, they didn't have a solution for the all-out zero blitzes. And as Matt LaFleur said after the game, like, if you don't stop that, they will continue to do it. And that's exactly what happened. And Jordan Love is not in the same point in his career as Aaron Rodgers. So you do that to Aaron Rodgers, bing, 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 bing. He finds the open guy like that, and he's just killing you. Jordan Love's not there yet. And so the results were kind of what I expected once that started working.
How do you expect that they will prepare this week? Because they're not going to know whether or not they're actually going to have Rodgers back until Saturday. And obviously, if there's anyone in the league that is fine to step on a field one day after, you know, without any practice time, it's Aaron Rodgers. But it seems like now you understand that you can't just drop Love into Rodgers' offense without much adjustment and expect to have success. I would imagine that puts this coaching staff in a tough bind this week in terms of game planning.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating to see how they do this. I really do. Luke Getsy, their quarterback's coach and their passing game coordinator, used the exact same phrase you did. If any quarterback can do it, he can. And it's true. So their plan will be for Jordan Love. I would assume they have kind of dueling game plans. And we'll ask Matt LaFleur that when we get the chance. But somebody's still got to take the snaps in practice. And so they need to run some things that if for some reason Aaron Rodgers does not get cleared on Saturday, they have some sort of contingency that is not, like you said, the same thing Aaron would run. Now, one thing that's interesting is that Aaron Rodgers looks at last offseason as, and he called it his Desert Rose, which didn't make sense at the time. And then I found out that he had had a friend who just told him to try and get that phrase into a podcast.
Okay. So
but what it really was a panacea for him. Like, they were able to really work together on the offense, and it was all via Zoom, just like we are right now. So I do think that they can get the preparation this week for him. At the same time, this is a guy who has always professed the importance of practice. So I will be curious to see how effective he is without any practice time whatsoever.
What do you think is the takeaway long-term from a Green Bay front office standpoint from this? Because obviously the Rodgers stuff happens, and that is about two news cycles worth of content. And then everything settles down. And I thought, okay, there's a silver lining here. And that is that this Green Bay team will actually have a look at Jordan Love in a meaningful game before they have to make any franchise altering decisions in the offseason. It didn't go the way that Jordan Love or the front office would have liked. So what do you take away from it? You said you're not willing to just completely turn the page on him yet. And I think that that's smart, but it puts them in a weird position.
It, no doubt it does, because they have no clarity, right? One of my favorite musicals is Wicked. And there's a line in there where they say, there are precious few at ease with moral ambiguities. And so we act as if they don't exist. And what the Packers have is a total ambiguity at quarterback. Because on one hand, you've got the complicated fella who is going to get your team fined. And you have your next guy who is clearly not quite ready. And for those that were during this offseason saying, give the ball to Love, he's ready, he's going to be fine, I think you have to back off that position after what we saw yesterday. Now, on the flip side, we have a GM who has dealt with Aaron Rodgers. And I kid about the complicated fella, but that's what Aaron Rodgers is. Like, my beef with Mark Murphy was not that he called him that. It was that he said it out loud, because it only made things worse this offseason. The fact of the matter is that Aaron Rodgers is kind of at a point where I'm going to do what I want to do and say what I want to say. And that did not do them a whole lot of favors this week in terms of the news cycle. Now, there are some that liked what they heard, and I have tried to stay away from that as best I can. But the problem is that this is yet another piece of the puzzle of, do you want Aaron Rodgers to continue as your quarterback? The other pieces are the salary cap and figuring out the extension, Jordan Love's development, his own excellent play, because he's still playing really well. So they didn't get any clarity either from the heir apparent or from the guy who's played really well, but obviously has created more issues for them as an organization, which is what they were frustrated with in the past.
You know, Aaron Rodgers, what do you think he's thinking right now, or how might he be reacting to all of this? Do you think he's enjoying the fact that he actually gained some leverage in this situation and looks again like the person who was in the right in that showdown in the off season? Or do you think he's primarily concerned with the fact that the team lost and that he put his teammates in this position?
Yeah, it's a fascinating position that he's in, right? Because, and I have not spoken to him. I sent him a message after the news that he tested positive and just said, hey, I hope you're okay, because this thing's no joke. After that, I don't have any idea what to say to him right now, frankly. So that's part of my problem. But if you look at what happened yesterday from his lens, if Jordan Love plays really well, on the one hand, you're mad, right? Because you want them to see that they need you, right? We all want to, right? On the other hand, if Jordan Love plays well, that would open the door potentially for them to feel better about allowing you to go play somewhere else after this season, right? Like, they feel better about where they stand at quarterback. So it had to be a real quandary for him. I would hope, being the competitor that he is and the guy that I think I know, that he wanted Jordan Love to play well enough and have them win. Maybe not throw for 400 yards and 4 touchdowns, like I think Aaron Rodgers might have against that defense, but certainly play better than he did and have the outcome be they continue to win. So that's what I would like to think. But again, I'm really eager to see. I'm eager to talk to him. Apparently it'll be by Zoom next time. And I'm really eager to see how he feels about where this team is, because I will say this. I think his approach with some of this stuff was not exactly taking a full responsibility on himself for whatever parts there were that he deserved responsibility for. And there is no doubt in my mind that they're 8-1 and feeling really good if he's the quarterback yesterday. So if I'm him, that's probably the thing I'm struggling with.
Do you think that what happened yesterday increases the chances that he returns to Green Bay next year?
If I'm the Packers, it does. I don't know what it does for him.
Does he just really want out? I mean, is he at that place where hard line in the sand? Because it felt like he wanted out because he didn't feel like they wanted them, which, yeah, I think for most people, you could change that dynamic.
That for me, and again, without getting into the weeds of everything he said to Pat McAfee, for me, the most disappointing thing, besides the fact that I had the opportunity to ask the right follow-up question on August 26th and I failed, is that things were all, in the words of the great coach Al McGuire, seashells and balloons around here. They'd won 7 in a row. Rodgers is talking about how he and Goody are talking more. He's talking, I did a story for The Athletic where I talked to him, and he talked about how he's seen changes in people that he didn't expect. He's playing really well. LaFleur loves him and he loves LaFleur. Like, until last Wednesday,
yeah,
this was like peace, love, and future together kind of stuff, right? Like, he had to be reconsidering whether or not he wanted to stay. You know, he's going to Halloween parties with all his guys, and it just felt like everything was going so well. And now everything is kind of thrown into chaos. And Brian Gutekunst is sitting there going, I don't know if I can win with the kid, but I don't know if I want to put up with the old guy anymore either. And so that's kind of where we are now. I'm eager for the next 8 weeks. I think it's going to be a fascinating,
yes,
final 2 months, and then see where they go in the postseason.
Yes. And definitely a stare down. I agree with regard to what protocols he's going to follow now that the NFL is looking at them and willing to fine the team and the position that that puts the team in. And you're trying to rein that all in from a team standpoint without upsetting him to the degree that whatever leverage he has to leave pushes him out the door. It's just a fascinating situation.
Yeah. And all because the guy's the best to ever do it. Like,
yep,
Tom Brady's the greatest winner. There's no doubt about that. He is the GOAT. But I don't think there are any quarterbacks that I've seen. And obviously I've covered Rodgers much more closely, but I covered 75% of Favre's career. I've seen other great quarterbacks. There are things he does that nobody can do. And if he didn't have that ability and still have that ability, maybe you say he's not, the juice is not worth the squeeze. But the juice is most definitely still worth the squeeze when you look at what happened yesterday.
He's a talented guy. It's complicated. Jason, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
It was really my pleasure. Thanks for the invite.
Coming up next, the voice of the Giants, Bob Papa, who called yesterday's win for the team on radio their third win of the season, an upset over the Raiders, who came in 5-2 in the 2 seed in the AFC. That conversation coming up after this.
Hey everyone, it's Brad the Big Noise Evans from the Feed the Noise podcast. From Monday through Friday, catch me and the good sir, Nate Lundy, as we take you through each day's best sports betting opportunities. Whether we're talking spreads, totals, props, or anything else, we will do our Fade 5 to give you the knowledge and confidence to place your bets. Always remember, fade or follow, that's up to you. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts or listen on the SXM app, free for most subscribers.
All right, Bob, that game you called yesterday, one of many that went in a direction that many of us were not expecting. How do you explain that Giants win, especially when you look at the box score and you see 403 yards for Vegas and 245 yards for New York?
Well, the Giants played to their profile in the win yesterday. They knew that they're without Andrew Thomas there, they're weak at the tackle spot. So they knew that they had to do a lot of max protect. So they used a sixth offensive lineman on, I think, 18 snaps during the game. They had to run the ball and be physical. And then, as I said, play to their profile. And they were able to force the Raiders into some turnovers. You know, the Raiders are a completely different team. Obviously, the rug situation and what happened was just horrible. And you feel so badly for the victim's family. From a football standpoint, they need him. They needed him, his style play, which is why they're signing DeSean Jackson. They need somebody to be able to take the top off the defense. The Giants just were able to play a shell defense, not let Waller kill him. And then they were opportunistic. And the whole game really changed at the end of the second quarter. The Raiders are driving. They have a chance to score a touchdown. And Derek Carr misses a wide open Waller in the end zone. They have to settle for a field goal. Raiders get the ball to start the third. Xavier McKinney gets the pick six, and the whole momentum of the game changed for the Giants, and that's why they're able to win.
So I thought that they would be able to run the ball on Las Vegas. I think a lot of us thought that, who have seen Las Vegas play defense. And they certainly did that. Devontae Booker stepping into that role very nicely in these last 2 weeks with a couple of 100-plus scrimmage yard games. Is there a role for him in this offense once Saquon returns?
Yeah, I think there will be. I don't. First of all, Saquon has proven to be injury prone. Okay, outside of his rookie season, now this is the third straight year in which he's had injuries that have caused him to miss significant time. So I think if you think about where Joe Judge comes from, coming from New England, it's about multiplicity and it's about interchangeable parts. And although Barkley is going to get a lion's share of the snaps when he gets back, I think Booker has proven to them that he is a guy that can do some things for him. I mean, he's caught a lot of passes out of the backfield in his career. And I think you have to be able to give Saquon Barkley a couple of breathers during the course of the game. Now, with that said, that's all well and good when you go into the game. But then as the game starts to unfold and you start thinking of all these matchups in which Barkley can beat you, do they lapse back into the giving him a ton of snaps? I think when he first comes back, clearly they're going to have to ease him back in. But it'll be interesting to see how they handle that moving forward because Booker has proven to be a quality backup role player for them.
Might require a little offensive creativity on the part of Jason Garrett to get both of those guys on the field. Because frankly, when you look around at the rest of the offense, and I know that guys have just been tremendously banged up all the way across the board, the wide receiver spot in particular, in addition to Saquon, there just aren't that many weapons that are out there. Although I will say this, I was shocked, that said, that Kadarius Toney was used in the way that he was yesterday, because I think a lot of us have seen, you know, what he can do and thought, this is the answer moving forward, and expect maybe that they'll work him into the office in a very big way. And then yesterday, one target for, what was it, 9 yards, and then one rush attempt for -2. What is his role in this offense right now? How do they view him there?
Well, I mean, I think they view him as someone that can be a multifaceted weapon. But again, you know, it all goes back to the offensive line. I mean, look, did they get, I thought they got too cute. They had a little momentum going, and then they brought him in that wildcat on the third down, and he got stopped. They tried to use him to throw a pass in the game. He was a high school quarterback. But they can't block. They can't pass protect with Andrew Thomas out. They're just too weak. They had to spend so much of the game with six offensive linemen. And even one time where they tried to break tendency, because they were running the ball consistently with the sixth offensive lineman in there. They had a first and 10. They came up in that personnel package, and they tried to run a play action pass on first down. They had a one-man route with Golladay. And Daniel Jones was under pressure right away. So I don't think you can really get a sense of what they can do with him until they get Thomas back and they can shore up the offensive line. But when you think about, you know, they should have Sterling Shepard back after the bye. They've got Golladay back. They've got Slayton still there, who was a non-factor. And then with Evan Engram and Kyle Rudolph and Kadarius Toney, and if Barkley's back, you know, you do have a lot of weapons to work with, but it all starts up front. If they can't pass protect at an average level, what's the use of having all these great toys to play with?
So for the people that are listening to this that are not Giants fans, I know a lot of people will be listening with a fantasy football spin. What I'm hearing is maybe don't fire up any of those wide receivers on your fantasy roster until maybe Andrew Thomas is back.
Well, the fantasy guru, yes, the fantasy guru, John Hansen of Sirius XM Fantasy, he's very bullish on Kadarius Toney for fantasy points because he still believes that, you know, when the Giants have their complement back, and especially when Barkley gets back and Thomas gets back, and if Golladay remains on the field, they have a lot of ways to threaten you defensively. But like being in the booth calling the game yesterday, you know, you're looking at it from above and you see the coverages that the Raiders are in, and you're like, man, Toney is blowing by some people, but Jones's back foot's hitting and he's got to check down to the back. Like, you can't run anything deep and you can't run anything vertical right now because you don't want your quarterback to get killed. So hopefully after the bye, which comes at a good time for them, to get some of these people back, and we'll see what they can do offensively.
Saquon?
You think, you hope.
unwilling to say anything definitive where he's concerned at this point.
Well, I mean, I don't think they know at this point. Yeah. I mean, everybody heals at a different rate. Obviously it wasn't a high ankle sprain. He got hurt in the Dallas game. So, I mean, you're talking about 5 weeks by the time they play the Bucs. You hope that he's going to be back by that point. But you never know. But he's such an important concept or facet to this offense that, you know, 'cause he makes bad offensive line play better too. So they better get him back, put it this way. But I think moving forward, organizationally, you got to really start to think about what's the long-term best solution in all of this, because 2 years ago, it was an ankle injury that kept him out for a while. Even though he still got to 1,000 yards, he wasn't the same. Last year was the knee injury early. And this year, he's going to miss, you know, 4 games, maybe 5 games because of an ankle injury. You can't allow your franchise and your football team to be held hostage by one player and injury.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that they're going to have to really revisit and look hard at moving forward.
Well, and I know that there's been a lot of frustration there amongst New York Giants fans this year, directed at Gettleman primarily. He's had to deal with so many injuries, not just Barkley. And there's obviously a valid argument that just says, like, hey, you don't take a running back that high in the draft, and this is what happens when you do. But in terms of the offensive line injuries and in terms of the wide receiver injuries, is there an argument that you would make that is a valid argument for patience and the way that this team is constructed and why it might be okay moving forward?
Giants fans don't want to hear about patience. Carl Banks and I recorded our Believe in Giants podcast this morning. And, you know, I know fans are rooting for losses. There's a small segment of the fan base that's rooting. They get mad when they win. We hear from them all the time. It stinks. You're just putting off the inevitable, whatever. No, they're going to make changes. They're going to make changes because, you know, it's not just, see, Joe Judge walked into a tough spot.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is he took over a franchise and fans get very optimistic, right? We're going to change. It's going to get better.
Yeah.
But he's inheriting like a decade long worth of mess. I mean, if you go back to 2013, all the way until the present, outside of 2016, when they won double digit games and got to the playoffs, they've been awful. I mean, before yesterday's win, they had the worst record in the NFL in the last 5 years, the worst. I mean, that's counting the Lions, the Jaguars, the Jets. They had the worst record. So fans are like, they've had it up to here with the whole patience thing. And, you know, I think the one thing that, you know, Dave Gettleman and his staff are going to have to answer to, and I'm not giving any state secret away, but when he took over, he said, the offensive line needs to be fixed, and we're going to fix the offensive line. What happened to Eli Manning in what should have been the prime of his career? He was saddled with a terrible offensive line, and you couldn't get the most out of him. And the question is the offensive line really any better today than it was when they came in, when this staff came in and took over? And I think the answer is no, it's not better. Could be the same.
But they've used so many resources to try and make it better. Why is it not better?
Well, that's a deep dive for ownership, because you could go back to when Jerry Reese was the general manager, and it's not as if they didn't invest draft picks in offensive linemen. I mean, they took Justin Pugh in the first round. They took Eric Flowers in the first round. They took Weston Richburg in the second round. They took Andrew Thomas. They took Will Hernandez high in the second round. So now you have to start thinking, okay, we have kind of swung and missed on a lot of offensive linemen taken in the first and second round, and it's two different general managers. So what are we doing as an organization as far as how we're viewing this position? Because why do we keep missing so drastically? And I think that's something that they're going to have to make a determination as to what's part of the problem here right now, because it's two general managers, it's two regimes, it's Coughlin, McAdoo, Shermer, and now Judge. It's four head coaches, and the same problem kind of continues to linger.
When you say there will be changes this offseason, what change should they not make? What change would you bang the table for? Because obviously people are calling for a bunch of different changes, right? Which one do you think is not actually a problem, but is looking like a problem because so many other things are a problem? Is there
I mean, the fan base wants everybody fired, which is what fans do. And Joe Judge is not part of the problem. Okay. I believe personally, look, we're going through growing pains. Parcells was crappy his first year as the head coach of the Giants. He had no head coaching experience. Judge is learning on the job. Is utilization of timeouts, is it great? No. Is there a learning curve with some of this stuff? Of course. So I would have patience with that, because internally, when you're in the building, one of the things that I do like about this team, which is reminiscent of some of the bad Tom Coughlin teams that he had late in his tenure, is when you walk in the building, there's no sniping. You haven't heard anything about off the record comments as the season kind of turns wrong. Everybody's together. Everybody's buying in, and I think that's a positive thing, because I've been around teams where it's the other way. There's a lot of things leaking out and stuff like that, and people throwing each other under the bus. There's none of that going on. So he's staying. I think that the quarterback should stay. I know Daniel Jones, you know, look, the fumble against the Raiders yesterday, that's inexcusable. That's on him. I mean, He's got to feel that. He's got to step up. He's got to secure the ball better. That was careless on his part. And that is a concern because it continues. But I still think that he's got enough upside that you ride with him for another year. I mean, you have the luxury of you've got his fourth year on a rookie deal, and then you have a fifth year option. So you don't have to make any real hard decisions at this point. And those are the two main things that fans talk about all the time. And I think those two things should not be changed.
Let me ask you this about Judge, because having not been around him personally, you obviously know him, you know how the players respond to him. When I've talked to some people in other NFL cities about coaches that are having success, that the fan base is really like, one of the words that comes up a lot is authenticity. Like Brandon Staley, right? People are like, he's just authentic. He, you know, all of humility, all of this stuff. And when I hear that, I think that from afar, some of the things that Joe Judge has said feel like he's channeling what a coach is supposed to say or how a coach is supposed to behave. And it feels a little old school. Is it authentic? Is it working in the building?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, listen, they try to bring in player. They've tried to bring in players as they kind of reshape the roster. I remember Scott Pioli told me this when he used to be a co-host of mine on Sirius XM NFL radio. He said, look, you know, we would make sure. Why do you think the Patriots always have a bunch of Alabama guys? Why do you think the Patriots for a long time had a pipeline with Rutgers players, players from Iowa? Because those are players that come from programs where they're coached in college as Belichick coaches them as pros. Okay. Greg Schiano, when he was at Rutgers in the first incarnation. So I remember Scott saying, we would, you know, you look at guys, you look at talent level, but if they're not going to accept our style of coaching, and I think that holds true to a lot of organizations, it's just different styles. So they're trying to bring in people that get it, that get what they're preaching. And it's pretty authentic, trust me. Again, if it wasn't authentic, players know when they're being lied to, and players know when coaches aren't being honest with them. And this coaching staff is brutally honest with the players. And that's why you don't hear any of the off the record stuff. You don't hear any of the sources close to the team say.
That's a good point.
And when coaches are not authentic with players and when they don't tell them the truth and they tell a player something to his face and then they do something else, that's when you get all of that off the record, unnamed sources kind of thing.
People feel like they need to start protecting themselves because they don't feel protected.
Yeah. So, you know, and he protects his players a lot. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that goes on as far as screw ups and stuff like that, that he internally, you know, he'll get on them, but he never throws anybody under the bus publicly. I mean, you know, think about the game in Kansas City. I mean, there are coaches that probably, you know, might have been a little bit more forceful about O'Shane Zimenez jumping offside and what could have been a game-clinching interception, but he didn't single him out by any stretch of the imagination. So I think he's a lot more authentic than people realize.
Let me ask you about the team that the Giants beat yesterday and your impressions of the Raiders and their viability moving forward. Obviously, the loss of Ruggs changes things for them pretty dramatically, though they haven't used him all that much. If you go watch the tape, it's not like Carr's out there or has been out there targeting Ruggs just constantly. But I think that the threat of somebody like Ruggs being out there obviously changes things in terms of the way that the defense has to play you. I'm not sure that DeSean Jackson is exactly the answer at this stage in his career. He hasn't played a ton of snaps. You talked about Saquon Barkley's injury history. DeSean Jackson is that guy too. So I feel a little bit like this was a team that was playing better than their roster looks on paper. And I feel a little bit now like enough things have happened that maybe the air is starting to leave the balloon a little bit. As much as I really love Carr and his leadership ability and some of the other weapons that they have there, I'm not sure if I see a path forward for them to be one of the best teams in the AFC as they've been to this point. Based on what you saw on the field yesterday, what's your take on them moving forward?
Well, you're right about Ruggs in the sense that it's not like they overused him, but the threat of him caused you to have to play defense differently. And Lindsey, going into the game yesterday, they had 13 pass plays this season of 30 or more yards, which, you know, those are really explosive plays. He had six of those 13. So now you take him out of the equation and it changes everything. You can now give a lot more attention and safety help with Waller. And Waller had a good game yesterday, but he didn't have a blow it up kind of game yesterday. I mean, he had a bunch of catches. They kept him under 100 yards. I think his longest catch was 24. So Deshaun Jackson's going to come in. We know what he does, right? He runs those long, deep crosses. Carr is going to heave it up there. But, you know, he's older and he has not shown the ability to like stay healthy during the course of the season. If I was them, I would really make a heavy play for Odell Beckham Jr. because he gives you that. And he's a younger player. And I think he's more of a threat down in and down out.
Do you think that the signing of Deshaun eliminates Odell? Like, I was trying to figure out what it meant. Because if you feel like you might get Odell, does signing Deshaun dissuade Odell from choosing you as a...
I don't think it dissuades Odell. Hopefully it doesn't dissuade the Raiders because, you know, Edwards is a nice player. Renfro has the role that he has. And Zay Jones really didn't create a lot of separation or anything yesterday. So you could roll Odell and Deshaun Jackson out there and suddenly you've upgraded everything. And let's not discount. Here's the other thing about the Raiders that I'm not out on them at this point. I still kind of believe in the Raiders a little bit. They got Josh Jacobs back yesterday and he was a big factor in the game. It was his first game back from that chest injury. I think if they have a little bit more balance, but they have that threat of the over-the-top guy, I think they could be okay. I'm not ruling the Raiders out.
It feels very, like from a roster construction standpoint, it feels very similar to last year and the year before. Like Waller, Jacobs, you know what I mean? Like they're great players and they'll get you points in fantasy, but it just hasn't been a recipe for success for the Raiders. So I'll be curious to see what Deshaun can do, I guess.
And I'm not crazy about their back end. I mean, they went into yesterday number one in the NFL defensively in quarterback hits. Crosby led the NFL in quarterback hits. Ngakoue led the NFL in quarterback pressures. I think their front seven is really good. I think the back end is a little susceptible, as we've seen in some of these wild games that they've played. But they need another piece in that wide receiver room to balance this out, and really I think would help them get a bigger effect of having Jacobs back.
Totally agree. When you, and obviously you were focused on this game, when you looked at the scores that were coming in around the rest of the league, what surprised you the most?
Well, I mean the Cowboys game was ridiculous. And I went back and I watched that one last night. And that's, you just can't do that. Like the Dallas Cowboys are the best team in the division. You can't lay an egg like that at home against a team that just traded Von Miller away. It's not even like Von Miller was on the Broncos. That one concerned me. The Bengals concerned me because I've been, you know, the Bengals showed, I think the Bengals proved to everybody. They showed everybody that it's really hard to win in the NFL when you've achieved a certain amount of success. And they just had a little amount of success, but they caught everybody's eye with that beatdown of the Ravens in Baltimore.
Yep.
And now they're not just the Bengals. Now they're, the Bengals.
Oh, yeah.
And to give up 14 points late against a bad Jets team and a backup quarterback, and then to get throttled like they did yesterday is a little bit of a concern. You know, the fact that the Rams could not block Tennessee. I mean, when you lose Derrick Henry, we all wondered what Tennessee would be like. That was a shocking result, obviously, from yesterday.
And Tennessee didn't actually do anything. So they had 143 yards passing. Tannehill had an ADOT of 4.4. He had just two passing attempts of 15 plus yards, two attempts of 15 plus yards. And then on the ground, they had 69 yards rushing with all of those backs. They only had five runs of five plus yards on 22 attempts. You have to go back to early in the 2019 season. Oh, no, actually, I guess they've done that one other time. It's tied for the lowest number from a Titans offense since early 2019. I mean, they didn't answer any of the questions positively about, like, are the Titans going to still be that team that they were with Derrick Henry? Like, if you just were watching them and not, I mean, I guess you could look at the defense and the fact that the defense stepped up and did what they did to the Rams, but it felt very like self-inflicted wounds from a Rams standpoint. So I'm not sure I even learned that much about the Titans in that game that makes me feel good about them moving forward.
Well, the one thing we did learn is that their front dominated the Rams front, which created those opportunities. Remember, one of the scoring drives was a 2-yard scoring drive because of the interception. And then you get a pick six, and now you get a defensive score. And 11 quarterback hits in the game. That's the official stat in the stat book. It felt to me like Stafford got hit more than 11 times. So they won the game by playing to the right profile. They were really physical. Now, can you keep that up over a long stretch with that limited amount of offensive production? I don't know. But the Rams have a pretty good defense of their own. So I think it was a great win. It was a feel-good win for Tennessee. Let's see if they can sustain that. They've got to be better offensively than they were last night. Now, they're not going to be going against the Rams defense every week. But I think the reason why the Rams made so many mistakes offensively is because Tennessee forced them into it. You know, holding calls, offensive line procedural penalties. That was all because they were getting their butts whipped up front. And that's something that, if I'm a Rams fan, I'm a little concerned about.
Tennessee does have a pretty good schedule moving forward, too. They've got two games left against Houston. They have Jacksonville. They have Miami, so with a 3-game lead in that AFC South at this point, head-to-head.
Yeah, they're not losing the division. They're not losing the division. Because Charlie Weiss and I were talking about it on our show. I mean, before this week, even if they went 4-5 the rest of the way, it was going to mean that the Colts could only lose one more game because the Colts have to finish ahead of them to win the division. They can't finish tied. So this division, and especially with last night's win, barring, you know, a catastrophe, if Tennessee plays 500 ball the rest of the way, they're winning the division and getting a home playoff game.
Who do you think is the best team in the NFL?
The best.
I love the pause because it feels like, especially after yesterday.
Well, you know,
I don't know.
We don't want to say it because they're not a sexy, high profile team. They play in a smaller market and they don't have a rich tradition of winning. But how can you not say that the Arizona Cardinals are the best team in the NFL as of right now?
After that win yesterday with nobody?
They won a football game yesterday with some of their best offensive weapons not playing. So to me, and when they've played division opponents, they have beaten the stuffing out of them. They've won on the road. I mean, let's not forget, they went and played at Los Angeles against the Rams and toyed with them. I mean, they made fun of them. And Kyler Murray didn't play. Colt McCoy played yesterday. Okay, and Colt McCoy is now number two in single game completion percentage in the history of the Cardinals with his performance yesterday. So when you can win with spare parts and dominate, as of right now, they are the best team in the NFL. That doesn't mean they're winning the Super Bowl. As you know and I know, things change. Because a couple of weeks ago, we thought the Bills were the best team in the NFL. So, you know, we'll wait and see. But as of right now, the Cardinals are the best team in the NFL. Outside, well, hold it. Can I preface that?
Yeah.
Outside of the defending Super Bowl champions.
Yes. We do tend to forget about them, huh? I don't know how, but yeah.
Yeah, and they're on a bye this week. I defer to the defending Super Bowl champions as always the best team in the league until someone beats them, and they've done nothing to disappoint me this year.
Bob, I appreciate your time. You're awesome.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks again to Bob and Jason. You can find Jason on Twitter at Jason J. Wilde. That's like wild with an E at the end. Bob is BobPapa_NFL. One team we did not talk about today on the podcast that I actually think is arguably the most interesting one coming out of this week is the Cleveland Browns, who set Odell loose and then played their best ball of the season. It's kind of consistent with the pattern that we've seen created there in the last year or so, and we will explore that further on Wednesday's pod. Thanks for listening today. If you enjoyed this episode and you want to hear more, please give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Pandora, or wherever you get your podcasts. The NFL Roadshow is also available on the SXM app. Free for most subscribers. Just download it today and tap podcasts. For video clips of the show and more, follow me on Twitter, Lindsay_Rhodes. I'm also on Instagram, LindsayRhodesNFL. The NFL Roadshow is part of the SiriusXM Podcast Network. The executive producer is Andrew Emmer. Andy King is the director of sports podcasting for SiriusXM. And a special thanks to SiriusXM's senior vice president of sports programming and podcasting, Steve Cohen. We'll see you back here on Wednesday.
SiriusXM Podcasts.